I mean, I don't know.
For me, it's all pretty. And my perspective might be strange, but it's interesting to watch as, and this is happening all over the world. Like, the world is becoming more even. Not so much class-wise as it is, like, a lot of places look like Nairobi, look like Lusaka, look like, and then it's interesting as everyone's like, you see it's all falling down now because it's all beginning to look like Nairobi, and I'm like, interesting, you know, that's, you know, it's kind of funny, like, you know, we talk about like shoddy workmanship, like, at the same time, like, China's like, infrastructure is crazy great. You know, comparatively, like, it's kind of amazing, like, the infrastructure here, like, and, but then the world is generally kind of headed in the same direction, and it's just interesting, because I feel like, not to say that Nairobi works, or that Lagos works, Lagos, which is, like, now, like, the model megacity, but at the same time, it's interesting that the kind of general call for alarm about things, you know, the general, like, you see class differences are deepening. I'm always like, that's the, I mean, that's what it is. That's, I feel like we always kind of look at things as if they're new, you know, and that's what's
kind of
interesting.
It is new, isn't it? It is new.
What's new?
The whole, I mean, that class differences are getting, becoming so pronounced.
Especially here in China.
Yeah, and here in China, I mean, even in the U.S., you know, you have, I mean, relatively new. It's been happening for the last 50 years, but, I mean, that's a huge thing, isn't it?
I didn't think it was that new,
but... Short time.
But it's happened, I think.
And the longer time is not that new.
Emerging developing nation now.
Feudalism was not really...
Yeah, but things weren't exactly even.
You know, so it's just like, I just switched our time frame for sort of as
okay, yeah, okay, but so, you know,
like,
you could get a peak then,
really,
you know, of like... an egalitarian peak, you know, and that kind of moving back towards this thing.
But,
where
but that egalitarian peak has always been a lie.
Never existed.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying, like, we ever had an egalitarian society, but, it, I mean, people are, I would say that, you know, lower classes are getting to the point where there's no less mobility now than there was before.
There's less.
Less.
Yeah.
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 You know, I mean, and you're talking
is
in the short term.
Like, is
yeah,
it true?
For
like,
sure.
What, sorry, am I...
When was this mobility?
Huh?
I'm trying to figure out
okay.
this mobility.
This is the, like, one statistic I know, but like in 1968 in the U.S. was the last year where a blue collar worker could support a family of like I think five, in a comfortable middle class lifestyle. So they could buy a house,
right.
You know, they could have the picket fence, whatever,
completely.
whatever, right? That's not necessarily being able to climb the classes, right? But that's a whole hell of a lot different than having to live in an apartment.
But 1968 in the U.S. that blue collar workers. Like, ability to climb classes was built on the fact that there were a huge amount of, like,
people
who weren't allowed to even be blue-collar
yeah.
workers.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, it's just, yeah.
Mm. I mean, and just the whole idea of, like, capital basically accumulating in the top, what, like, 2 or 3% of the society, too, you know? I mean, that is a significant change. I don't think that you can just gloss over and just say, you know, it's always been like this, because it really hasn't. You know, we had, I think, the middle class is emptying out.
1% of the people in, like, the South owned slaves.
But that is, I mean...
Or even if you look at the Gilded Era in the States, I think that's why you had all these inheritance taxes put in place, is because a lot of the wealth in the United States was concentrated in and this is the United States, it's not the
yeah.
world. So, but, you know, was concentrated in a very, very small percentage of the society's hands. I think what you're looking at and what's different and sort of contextualizing all this is that this is a global, they're looking at it on a global scale versus just looking at it within the history of a specific nation.
Yeah,
that's what makes it unusual. I don't think the whole idea of like classes becoming radically separate is different. I think you're looking at a different way in which we're assessing society. I think that's no more hammered home than your point about 1968, how many people weren't even able to be considered as a blue-collar worker and didn't have access to that channel for employment. It's just shifting ways in which we assess from where we can.
Successive generations of design solutions are remapped on top of one another with a continuous change response adaptation cycle.
That was you guys, right?
No, that's hotness.
It all comes back to the
back.
I'm gonna buy this book and be like, yo, I was in Beijing, I met the people who remapped it.
Well, we're making new maps when we're talking about things in different ways. You know, like that whole exchange was just like, okay, you're looking at it in a totally different, possibly the same problem, but
yeah. I mean, I would still say, even comparing it to the Gilded Age, it seems so distant. You know, like, I think the society we've inherited is a post-war society, and by that I mean World War II. I mean, it kind of grew out of that, and it's the progression. You could date it from World War II pretty easily. I mean, you wouldn't be so far off. And so if you look at that, it's kind of gone through this cycle, you know? And I really think it hit a high water mark in some ways, in terms of just money being available for everyone. And now it's like our generation, right? How many of us are going to be able to easily own a home? Like, whereas my mom could buy a house, no problem, in a nice city, you know? And like, we're looking at something in the U.S., right? We're looking at the U.S.'s culture and society getting much older. And it's going to be a lot more like Europe, where people are going to be renting, you know? And the whole idea of like property ownership, which is a very American concept, a very post-war concept, right? Is going to kind of evaporate, or at least going to concentrate into the, you know. So I mean, I think that is a
I mean, I don't know, but maybe my person, like you talk about personal history, like my personal history is not like, hey, and then my mom owns a house. So.
Right.
So it's like the idea that like, then my mom was able to own a house, but I won't be able to. Is like kind of strange for me.
But I also think if you're Chinese right now and you're looking at the opportunity to own a house, it's actually quite easy to get a loan and to go and pay it off.
Yeah, right.
So I think you're looking, I mean, I'm just curious.
But
you
I
say
think
I
would also say that
I would
also say that, you know, China's is at this phase right now where that is possible. You know, they've almost hit something sort of like the American dream, you know. And you still have these really divisive ones through society, right? Like the migrant workers are not in the same kind of group as Han Chinese, you know.
Sure.
It's just that the possibilities are not the same. But you know,
no, I mean, I don't think that's fair to say that the migrant workers aren't in the same group as Han Chinese, because a lot of them are Han Chinese. They're not necessarily all minorities, and you're therefore equating sort of ethnic differences with socioeconomic situations. I don't think that's fair.
No, I think you're right.
Yeah.
But that's what I think.
Well, you know what I think? I lost my train of thought, but I mean, I guess I also haven't been in the States for a long time, so I'm kind of not really very fluent in what's going on there, but I don't know, I think...
It's going to hell.
And I think that also brings us back to Matt's point, where it's like, so great that what the American dream is now available to the average Chinese citizen, but that's not a realistic dream for the Chinese.
Yeah, right.
We're setting a horrible precedent for the developing world. Horrible precedent in general. You know, and we're still...
And for the developed world, I mean...
We're
not even following
precedent.
Protocols we suggested at the Kyoto.
Yeah. No, it's silly. And we're, every per capita, we're just way off the charts in terms of emissions and creation of waste, and you know, the Chinese love to use that as an excuse to sort of to avoid their own cleanup, and they're just, their rate of growth is just monstrous, you know, and what they desire in terms of like their, I mean, Beijing's crazy, but places like Chongqing, God, out of freaking control. Guangzhou, Chengdu, I mean, and then the whole entire Pearl River Delta. I mean, that's the easiest example on this planet of just runaway, you know, and at the same time, just completely unadulterated, rapacious development. A lot of it's just shoddy, too.
That's coming to an end this year. The whole manufacturing sector in China is just not dying, but there are a lot of closed downs. Guangzhou just released this whole new plan that it's trying to shift to a service sector economy.
Oh yeah, you should see the new Guangzhou like area. They're building this whole entire like new city just outside of it. I was just there like a month ago. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So it's one of the biggest open pits I've seen in China, and I've seen a lot of freaking open pits. And
is it gonna be like the new Tianjin?
Yeah, no, it's
with a lake with a waterfront like Chicago.
Yeah.
That's how they're pitching it.
I haven't been to Tianjin in a while. I wanna go back down there. But yeah, Guangzhou, I went on for the past 2 months. I went on tour with this punk band, and I was like seeing their concerts at night. And during the day, I was going to like photograph, you know, the new architecture and development. And I thought I was going to be, I mean, I didn't know what to expect totally, but I wasn't expecting. Guangzhou was the one that just completely almost blew me away the most. Like the new TV tower is ridiculous, and that whole entire new part of the city, the building across the water from it. And the new subway line was just, it was ridiculous. I mean, when else, but Chongqing is still, taking a river cruise on Chongqing and going from there up and looking at Chongqing's Development Museum is just a complete mess.